This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Referee, whistle, referee. Ha! There we go, lovely. Well done, Villa. Come on, let's go. 3 points in the bag.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me for an extra special episode where we get to celebrate
history being made.
No. The first away points of the season. That's the first thing. That's the first thing. In the most unlikely of places, only Everton have got a better home record, but it is important to pick up away points. So joining me to discuss our triumphant return from Old Trafford, all the way from the Monaco of the UK, Mr. Phil Shaw.
Hello.
Welcome. Why are you the Monaco of the UK?
That's all part of the master plan. Monaco's like a tax haven. It's like a gateway to places coming in. So now with everybody over in the mainland there suffering fuel shortages, we've no problem. We'll just charge a tariff and you can have it.
So you'll be living in a castle soon. So hopefully you'll set up a podcast studio there so we can all move over and record it there.
Get a plantation going, like rapeseed, make a petrol out of it.
Hemp. That's the future.
Also joining us, Mr. Chris Bird. Welcome.
Hello. How you doing?
Mr. Percussion, shall I say.
Thank you.
Mr. Percussion in Digbeth by the videos I've been seeing.
Yeah, it was good, that one. It was a good show.
Didn't really think much of that DJ shirt, though.
Well.
Bit of a Burton's job, if you ask me.
The look these days, apparently.
Luke or Burton's. No, more Burton's than Luke, I think, probably. but don't forget Mom's 20 for the Burton's discount code. All right, anyway, coming up in the show, we're going to love this one. We're going to, it's almost like we're in a bath of...
smug and insufferable.
Smug, bubbles, champagne, oysters. We're going to be enjoying this victory over those United bastards. Consummate victory as well, well executed, deservedly as well. There was no smash and grab about this. This was superior footballing team coming to another team's patch and just taking the 3 points and wandering off into the sunset. That's how I see it. Also in the show, we catch up on the latest Villa news, the 3 points. Check out the latest Media Muppet of the Week. There's always so much to choose from in terms of Media Muppet of the Week. Before getting into the business, the meat and gravy of the show, the Manchester United game. Oh yeah, before we get on, I've just had an email, actually, literally, as we were starting the show.
There's always breaking news, isn't there, when we're recording this bloody podcast?
Yep.
Well, I don't know if this is really breaking.
This isn't quite so global, although it's...
This is breaking news with a Nigerian heritage, I would throw in. The irony of this is I've got sent an email discussing our pronunciation of a certain player, and now I'm going to have to stick my neck above the parapet here to pronounce the name of the guy who sent it to me, and he's going to have to send me another email to shoot me down on the pronunciation of his own name. But here we go. Anyway, this is an email from Abina Nwusu. Fingers crossed that pronunciation's right. Hello, I love the podcast. It is the only one I listen to religiously, and it makes my commute to and from work so much more enjoyable. I have to say, as someone also of Nigerian descent, and with a brother who is actually named Amika, you gentlemen used to be the only podcast getting Carney's name pronunciation correct. Sounds like we've regressed, boys, since our halcyon days when we could pronounce names right. Now it has reversed as others have corrected themselves, while the mom's crew are now the ones consistently saying it incorrectly. Well, I think you've answered your own dilemma there, because we don't run with the pack. We don't go with the mainstream. As soon as everybody else started pronouncing it correctly, once they followed our lead, we decided, well, we're going to start saying it differently now.
Because if you go left, we'll go right.
Yeah, so it's not our fault. We just don't want to be, you know, we don't want to be...
We're ploughing our own lane.
Yeah, we don't want to be hamstrung by what others do and how others copy us. So this is how he said, Chukwumeka. To be honest, Abina, I don't remember pronouncing it correctly in the first place. You've given us too much credence there.
Until Carney himself comes out and says everyone's been getting it wrong, we're fine.
Now we've been down this road before with old Connor Hurihin. And we were calling him Connor Horahan. Then he came out with this, people pronounce my name wrong. But you know, Phil Shaw says over in the Monaco of the UK.
that's how you pronounce it in the principality, isn't it?
Yeah, people have been pronouncing it Horahan anyway. So, you know, he's there are certain people who get all particular about how to pronounce their name. And also there's like, you know, it's like the Andy Cole thing. Like when people get to a certain age, they think, oh, I'm mature now, so I don't want to be called Andy. I want to be called Andrew. And, you know, I've got friends like that who've done that. Oh, no, I'm not called that anymore. I'm called, you know, blah, 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 like the full version of my name.
You can now refer to me as Christopher.
It's like, yeah, whatever. So, yeah, let's see how this one pans out. Put it this way, if he becomes a first-team regular, then we'll make more of an effort. But you highlighted a very important point. The pronunciation was correct at the start. Oh, that's all we're interested in, is being first. So, you know.
That's the name of the game.
Once you pass the line, you slow down.
Everyone else is second over the finish line then. There's no points, you know, for second place.
We're on the podium, we're collecting the medal, we don't care what happens after. This is could be an extended intro, this one. So remember that guy gave us a review because we didn't mention Aston Villa until 30 minutes into the show.
Giving it a damn good go this week.
he might be up again, giving us another 2-star review for not mentioning Villa for the first 30 minutes. Well, let's try to tie it into Villa, because the interesting thing is we are off to the Tottenham Hotspur new stadium, and not even AJ managed to win a title at the new Tottenham Hotspur stadium.
It's very Spursy.
Very, very Spursy indeed.
And like Spurs against Arsenal, he got his ass kicked.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big Usyk fan, and have been following him for a good few years now, and the rhetoric of, oh, AJ's too big, blah, 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 was like, yeah, if he tries to blitz him out there and gets nasty, but Usyk's, you know, he's another level. He's like one of the best fucking movers that say a bigger weight range I've ever seen, and I think boxing's ever seen. And he actually schooled him. He, you know, handed his ass to him, basically. The funny thing was when somebody said, oh, you had him troubled, you know, do you think you could have knocked him out? And he said, well, my corner men told me not to knock him out because it was upsetting my rhythm. And it was like, you know, it's like, I could have, but I showed mercy.
Kind of like the Villa at Man United, frankly. We could have killed him off in the first half, but we thought, nah, we'll leave it until the last 2 minutes.
Yeah, Ollie Watkins was thinking, yeah, I could finish these chances I've had, but well, I'm going to leave it to somebody who's making his first start of the season, Courtney Horse. Let's share the love around.
Absolutely.
In that build-up to that fight, and we're not going to labour on this, but in that build-up of the fight, and it just sounds like somebody who's talking about sweet science and blah, blah, blah. Somebody who's only recently, after his first defeat, started talking about boxing and trying to make out he was the real deal and it wasn't about brand AJ. And, I think I like the guy. I think he's a decent guy, but it's just he's overthinking it and he thinks he's better than he is. And I listened to a lot of the interviews before the Usyk fight, and he really didn't sound like he knew what he was going in against. He hardly said anything about Usyk. It was almost like it was just another bum to knock out. And I thought, oh, he's slimmed down as well. This looks like he's going to try to outbox Usyk. And that's kind of, he's just dug his own fucking grave there.
Mm.
Quick rematch, you'll get the fucking same treatment. That's the end of his career.
Yeah, well, Brand AJ, if anybody's picking up the new FIFA this week, you actually start the game. You don't start the game playing football. You start the game as an influencer at Paris Saint-Germain Stadium, and you're brushing shoulders with AJ and Lewis Hamilton. So he's
fucking
concentrating.
Shit, that is, isn't it?
I know. It's enough to make you go, nah, I'm not going to bother this year.
In other sporting news, the Bears won the county championship, which I still can't understand, Chris Bird, why we were recording something for the weekend, the last episode, when I could have just gone around the corner and watched the Bears
silverware being lifted in the sunshine. The last hot day of the year.
The penny didn't really drop, you know, as you were telling me.
And it was free.
Was it?
Yeah, it was free.
Oh, now you fucking tell me. Like,
the last 2 days were free.
A week later, you'd fucking tell me. And it's literally around the corner. Now you're telling me it's free, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, they did really well.
Why didn't you fucking tell me? If it's free entertainment round the corner, silverware being lifted, I'd rather do that than speak to you. Jesus fucking Christ. I can't believe that, actually. If I knew it was free, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
You'd have been dialing into this podcast. It'd just be beep. I'd have done it from the stands in Edgbaston.
Nice there, isn't it? Up on the skyline terrace.
Are we up to half an hour yet? I'm
getting close.
I still want to get that 2-star review.
Keep going.
Anyway, let's get into some news. Shall we talk about panic petrol buying, or shall we talk about the Villa news?
Please, let's go with the Villa news, I think.
Personally, loves to be centre stage.
Does, doesn't he?
What was he coming out of this time?
He was coming out of, obviously, like an FA meeting about this biannual World Cup thing, just shooting it down resoundingly under the premise of, like, player... it's all about player welfare.
It was like outside some London hotel or whatever.
As they always are.
I think scarcity makes things very valuable, and every 4 years feels about right to me. Much more interested in the fact that next season, when we... playing an equally crazy idea, which is a Winter World Cup, we won't see any Premier League football in at the peak of our season between November and December, which is also, you know, something that people are going to have to get used to. But these decisions that get taken a long time ago, they bite quite soon. Next season, we'll all see that. I always have concerns about player welfare, but I have more concerns for our fans missing Premier League football for 5 weeks in the winter, which is our great national tradition and our great national heritage.
Yeah, the World Cup 4 years to biannual. I mean, it's got to stay 4 years. I know everybody wants to make money by having as many games possible, but it is getting to the point where I'm even believing the player welfare excuse. Because the whole resting them for cup games in the domestic season, player welfare, I don't actually buy into, because go back to when men were men in the 90s backwards, you'd play your full strength team in cup games and nobody would be moaning, would they?
Or if you were fit, you played.
Yeah, exactly.
No, whatever the game.
Mm-hmm. Especially with the advancements in sports science. Anyway, we're digressing from the World Cup. World Cup, 4 years, every 4 years or every 2 years?
Every four, like minimum.
Yeah, minimum.
You push it back more.
Yeah. In other news, Villa's game against the Saints has been brought forward to Friday night. So, unfortunately for away fans, that's a bit of a bitch of a Friday night trip down to St. Mary's.
On fireworks night, no less.
Yeah, so maybe take some pyro in your back pocket just to just liven the night up. We're there celebrating the United win. It's all good. But then you see Villa's social media, and this is a disparity between football and marketing, and people in marketing not actually being football fans or Villa fans per se. But I saw it on Instagram, I saw it on their website, celebrating Villa's win at Old Trafford as a famous win. Now, excuse me, but we've beaten Manchester United in an FA Cup final, a League Cup final, and we used to beat them, believe it or not, regularly.
Reasonably regularly, even in like the Premier League era.
You know, we are a club that started this godforsaken league back in the day. We've won the European Cup. Now, beating Manchester United away is not a famous win, is it?
No, it's getting a hoodoo off your back.
Hilarious win, maybe.
So they should reframe that. They should be calling it a famous win. It's too small time. So we'll have words with the club about that, because that's not the message we're putting forward.
Wasn't it? Well, certainly wasn't the message Smith put forward either after the game. He said, you know, it's not as much as the win is great. He said, it's all about the performance here. We came here and we took it to them.
Well, we'll talk about the game later, but yep. This is no famous win. This is the first of many, I venture. Meanwhile, Aston Villa's women's team must be getting a fucking nosebleed at the moment, because
they're up to third.
They won again, away win against Brighton, up to third in the table, and God knows what's going on there. I mean, they had a massive revamp after just escaping relegation on the last day of last season.
Sounds familiar.
So let's see what happens there. But some crazy results, because, you know, the likes of Manchester United getting tonked
6-1, wasn't it, against Chelsea, and Arsenal battered Man City 5-0.
And Manchester City I thought they were like the gold mark of women's football teams, because they, you know, they've got all these internationals, and getting whacked 5-0 is pretty embarrassing. But yeah, keep tabs on Villa women's team. I mean, just from what we've seen so far, I'm thinking mid-table.
Yeah, there won't be any, you'd like to think there won't be any trouble. Although it's a big one. I think next weekend they play Arsenal at Villa Park. Yeah. So big opportunity for them to play, obviously, in the main stadium.
Right, let's move on to my favourite part of the show, the Media Muppets. So, what's in the Media Muppets trough this week, Mr. Phil Shaw?
Well, this week it's a step up, Mr. Shane Callaghan on HITC, which
no,
I thought was a...
I told you never to mention HITC.
I thought this was a brand of mobile phone. I didn't know it was a website, so it just appeared, and...
HITC, and we shouldn't really be plugging it. These were the original clickbait motherfuckers that really boiled my blood. Here in the city, some kind of, I don't know, finance company that thought, oh, you know, they obviously got some SEO guy in and thought, oh, you know, we can make money by just doing websites and all kinds of sports and, you know, all the main things, and just go clickbait-tastic. But the sad thing is about, I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Phil. The sad thing is that these people only exist because idiots out there click on it. Don't click on, if you see HTC on News Now or whatever it is, do not click on it. Anyway, sorry.
The headline was, some Aston Villa fans are sick over what they've seen from 16 million Smith signing. And I went, oh shit, what has somebody done this time? Have they been like, you know, we've had in the past, we've had drink driving, we've had much, much worse going on. So I think, oh, somebody's done something really bad. But When I clicked on it, I should learn my lesson. It was a piece on Morgan Sanson having to come off injured. But there was a couple of dramatic paragraphs in the middle of this. And Mr. Callaghan went on to say, is Morgan Sanson injured? It's too early to say, but yes, it does seem certain that Sanson is injured.
Ooh.
Wonder where he got that idea from. Probably from him crying and limping off and walking down the tunnel.
The limp always gives it away, doesn't it?
This is not Dostoevsky, is it?
No, it's not, but he went on. He goes, and remember, Chelsea have a Champions League winning squad, so the fact that Sanson was impressing is indicative of his talent, making his injury issues all the more tragic. He's went there with tragic. I mean, it's not that stage yet. I mean, Chris said his career was on the line, but I don't think him
That's
coming off
could,
at half
could.
Time was tragic.
Career defining game.
So I mean, they managed to get a whole article out of something which, you know anybody else could have done a tweet. It was, oh, Sanson's tweaked something, has had to come off, that's it, you know, full stop, game over.
To be honest, this is the least of the HITC crimes. I mean, it's like, how do you wake up in the morning and this is your line of business, just to create some site that nobody needs? We don't need this shit in our lives. It's superfluous. But the fact that it's there and people click on it, it's just like, everybody's wasting time. It's like, you know, you don't get that much time on this planet. Everybody's wasting time. Right, on to the 3 points. Number one, as some listeners will know, there is a fan-led governmental review into the governance of football at the moment. And one thing that's popped up on the radar of the Tracy Crouch-led review, Conservative MP Tracy Crouch, is drinking alcohol in seats at football grounds, which has been banned since 1985. In this country, anyway. I mean, I've
been abroad. We both have, and you can drink in stands, can't you?
Yeah, I've been overseas, and people deliver you beers in, you know, football, you know, in Germany, and, you know, in other sports, you can drink in your seats. But the review seems to be leaning, according to the Times newspaper, is leaning towards the fact that this recommendation that this should be looked at and alcohol should be allowed at seats. I mean, it is a weird thing. It's the law, stricter letter, is alcohol is not allowed to be consumed within view of the pitch.
You're not even allowed it in a box, are you? That's the bizarre thing.
Yeah, so, and also, I think it's Norwich that has a hotel that overlooks the pitch. And if you're in the room that overlooks the pitch, it's like in the corner, I think. Yeah. You're not allowed to drink in your hotel room while the game is on.
Yeah, Norwich fans need a bit of drink at the minute when the game's on.
It's the only way they're going to get through this season. To be honest, I would recommend heroin for this season if you're a Norwich fan. What's that drug that we were talking about the other week that's 100 times more powerful than morphine?
Graham fentanyl.
Fentanyl, yeah, Graham fentanyl. For Norwich fans, I would recommend fentanyl for the rest of this season, just to get through it.
Yeah, ditch your Coleman's mustard and get some fentanyl.
I'm so glad we got that into this show somehow. Yes. Problem is, you know, there are, you've got to admit, there are idiots involved in going to watch football. So, but this is something you've got to self-police, I think. But, you know, everybody should be able to sip a drink while they're watching a game.
Unfortunately, you know, you see things from like the Euros back in the summer and the, you know, the previous World Cup, where whenever you'd see England score, pints just get launched everywhere. And I think there'd be some who would be conscious of that not happening in the stand.
Yeah, I mean, we live in the world where the idiots spoil it for the rest of us, and that is the problem. And
which the Germans seem to do it okay, don't they? Mainly because the Germans have a culture of actually drinking their beer. They don't want to waste good beer.
Can't imagine it would be. Yeah, can't imagine the beer would be cheap at a stadium.
Well, no. That's another thing, you know. If you're going to pay, silly pounds for, Heineken or whatever, you know, you don't want to be throwing it away. Anyway, point number two, Wolves have become, and this is completely left field, I'm still trying to work this out in my head. Wolves have become the first football club to start their own record label. They've teamed up with Warner Music UK's Alternate Distribution Alliance. Is this the music industry so desperate now that they're on their knees to like left field ideas from football clubs like Wolverhampton Wanderers?
I think this is Wolves left field. I think Warners are going, thank you for the money. Cheers for this.
So, well, they've paid some kind of upfront fee.
Well, if it's a label services deal, Wolves will be paying for those services, depending on, you know, the nature of the deal. So they've basically got a joint venture with ADA, which is Warner Music's label services department. So it's not actually, it won't be Warner's doing the A&R, the creative, or any of that stuff. So Wolves will have a label manager come in, or they'll probably have like consultants and various.
So what's their end game on this? Is it like to encourage like local?
There's a little bit of that, and I think they want. It's just alternative global engagement, but they're trying to dip into a market. You know, they're not a dominant force in football, let alone in music. I get why someone like, you know, a Man United would, or some, you know, someone with real power, and also they've got star quality within their fan base.
Yeah,
to be able to pull on, or in Man City, have got heavyweight music people that they can lean on to give it a bit of gravitas. But I just think with the Wolves, it's,
well, if Wolves kept that aspiring rapper Courtney Hawes and didn't transfer him to Villa, they might have had like a poster boy for their new record label,
scoring winners at Old Trafford and some such thing. But
they've dropped a bollock there. I don't know how you say that in French, but they've dropped a bollock there.
Moon bollock. It's just a really strange sort of gimmicky deal. I don't necessarily see the end game. I just think it's a bit like, you know, when football clubs want to go into esports. It's just another little bolt on to what they do. And it's about, you know, I think their argument is, we have a big global fan base, which I think is debatable if it's that big. But in the general school of thought, they have a big, in theory, big catchment that you can promote to.
Let me ask you one question just to end the discussion on this Wolves record label. Is Wolves launching their own record label going to stop us taking 3 points off them at Villa Park next month?
Fuck?
Exactly. Point number three. This is a more random one. Involves complicated names to pronounce, as per usual.
Change.
This is the scourge of this goddamn podcast.
it's just complicated spelling. If you pronounce it, it's fine.
Oh, well, over to you, Phil Shaw. Yeah. Point number three.
Yeah, well, this started as an amusing story about the vice president of Suriname, which is a country in Africa, Ronnie Brunswick, playing himself for the team he owns in the CONCACAF equivalent of the Europa League. So we've heard these stories before where some guy just says, right, I have all the power, I own the team, play me, you know, give me squad number 61, which is what he got there, and, you know, give me 20 minutes here. So on he comes, place in a 6-0 defeat for his team, Inter Muangatapo. But it has taken a bit of a turn because they found video footage after the match of him going into the opposition changing rooms and basically handing out brown envelopes to the opposition team and coming out with a shirt from the other club. So the matter is now being referred to the CONCACAF Disciplinary Committee, who will commence a formal investigation, and an update will be provided when the process is concluded.
So, sorry, what were you trying to say, that he bought their shirts?
I have no idea what he was doing. I mean, maybe he was paying them off for only losing 6-0, but...
I was going to say, you know, it's not as if he's bribing to win games or anything. They just took a beating.
Something's going on.
So anyway, so in the second half of this season for Villa, where's Perslet going to be playing? What position?
I thought up top because he likes.
No, he's not a target man, is he?
Oh, he's like a fox in the box. He likes the camera on him.
Nah, that means he's like a number six, isn't he? He wants everything going.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Threw him.
Right, well, as we discussed on the Something for the Weekend, we were in a position, I mean, I mentioned it when I said, I was at the Old Trafford game at 2009. I mean, I've been there since and, you know, seen some beatings. But the fact that you would actually say I was there at a game where Villa beat United was a hint that this isn't really going kind of right for us. But going into the game, I mean, we weren't really expecting anything because the last three games, Bruno Fernandes has had a penalty. And every time we've had some ascendance, we've always had our wings clipped against them and the ref's given a penalty. And you know the story. The football gods don't like Villa beating Manchester United. So going into the game, the only difference really from what we've been doing is Twinzabi obviously can't play against his parent club. Courtney Hawes is drafted in for his first game of the season. Now we're playing this 3-5-2. And the interesting thing is, you know, you've got one of your main boys, Leon Bailey, injured, but he's not going to be able to play in this formation anyway, which Buendia is like a 50-50 in this formation, depends what you want to go for. And interestingly, Grealish wouldn't really fit in this formation unless you played him at the kind of ahead of the midfield behind the forward or as one of, you know, the front two. So this is the thing that a lot of people miss. You know, the whole debate about, oh, Villa, you know, post-Grealish. This team was exactly the same as last season. The only difference was Ings instead of Grealish. And, you know, people are going, oh, Villa have bought well and, you know, it's a different team and blah, blah. They've bought well after Grealish. Well, actually, it's pretty much the same team as last season without Grealish. When people would say Villa can't do anything without Grealish, the only difference is we had Ings, you know, playing instead of Grealish. That's the context of it. I don't know if you have anything to say about that at this stage.
Well, looking into it, it seems to be that the 5-3-2 or 3-5-2, depending on how optimistic you are, what it's doing is it's stopping other teams getting shots on target against Villa. So to skip ahead in this match, I mean, United had 28 efforts on goal, but to bring out our old friend, expected goals again. This is the time when expected goals actually, if you use it in a broad stroke, you can see something, because United, had they not won the late penalty, they would have finished with a lower expected goals than Villa from only 7 attempts. So it's not something that you didn't know from your own eyes that Villa had the clearer cut chances, but still the formation is doing something right, because it's allowing 28 shots, but they're from places where they shouldn't really threaten the keeper.
But the interesting thing is about this formation, if you ask the average pessimistic Villa fan, we're going three centre-backs. First thing they're thinking, and I'll be guilty of this, when we lined up against Chelsea, is this is really, let's not mess around here. This is really a 5-3-2. But against Chelsea and then against United, even though we haven't got the most possession, we are creating, against United, we created the proper chances. So how has this happened? Why is this actually working as a 3-5-2 and not a 5-3-2? Because when we've played this previously, it's more of a 5-3-2, isn't it? We are on the back foot, and it's basically, all hands to the pumps in defence. But for some reason this time, we are actually, against the best teams in this goddamn land, creating the better chances. So what is the fundamental reason why this is actually working for us offensively?
For me, in a word, it's bravery. Simple as. I just think we're braver in possession. I think previously, especially now when you looked at it sort of in the early 2020 era, when we were sort of going to Leicester in the cup and playing through at the back, etc., in that little era. As you said, it was a back five. You had fullbacks, but they weren't crossing the halfway line. Now they're bombing on. So you've got a midfield five when you've got the ball. You've got a back five when you haven't. They're getting up and down. I think Cash gives you energy. I think Target is willing to get forward. I still think there's more to come from them both in the attacking third. But it gives us a different way of playing. I think it helps our midfield guys not get outnumbered quite so much. And it gives them that extra option. It gives us natural width. Whereas I think when you play a front three like an El Ghazi or a Traore, you get width, but you also leave lots of gaps.
Yeah. I mean, I think the main benefactor of this system in terms of personally is, I think, Matty Cash so far. The one who's embraced it and has actually shown improvement upon what he did last season.
Yep.
No coincidence he scores his first goal against Everton, and against United, he put it on a silver platter for old Target, who perhaps should have done better. And that was the first statement of intent. And you just see, this is a guy that's a winger that's transitioned to a fullback, and you now that the concept of the wing back actually suits
perfect for him.
Suits him perfectly. Yep. And Target, you could argue, I think once he has the attributes for it to suit him as well, as you said, Chris.
Yep.
He's somebody that perhaps it will come to him more.
Well, because you've got natural width and you're playing two up front, it means, we said it in the previous show, people like Ramsey, Louise, McGinn, your midfield three, who, by the way, on the day were superb, I thought, to a man. They normally have a forward pass on. Whereas in previous, in seasons, you've had a single focal point to your attack. And if your wing-backs aren't getting involved, you never have the overlap. You never overload the opposition, which we managed to do. There's infinite times in the first half where Matty Cash had, Luke Shaw pinned back. Luke Shaw didn't get forward all that often.
Yeah.
And obviously ended up going off injured. And it meant that the Villa's midfield three could actually put pressure on McTominay and Fred, who I remember we said a couple of seasons back now when we went there and drew the first season.
Was that the two-all?
The two-all. We said at that point, and I think those two played that day as well, we said, well, they wouldn't get in our team.
Yeah, we do.
And I stand by that now.
Yep.
Those two would not play ahead of our midfield. Now, they've got, Pogba. And further forward, you look at their front four of, it was Pogba, Greenwood, Ronaldo and Fernandes. Those four are world-class players. But those two who were sitting and meant to be mopping up and protecting Manu's back four, who, frankly, I don't think is actually a very good back four. You can see why Chelsea, City, Liverpool are ahead of them at the moment. But we could get onto them. They invited our attacking players onto them. And I think we knew very early, actually, we're in business here. Sitting back and defending isn't going to be the way to go today. And I think that's the thing. It's bravery, Smith's decisions tactically, our outlook. When we went to Chelsea, we were brave. We didn't finish our chances, but we were brave. Old Trafford, we were brave. We frankly should have scored 2-3-4 before we even actually got the winner.
I've said it on previous podcasts. The reason why United aren't going to lift the title this season, and quote me on it, is because their defensive side of their game is not all that. And that's what Smith identifying it. So let's get at them, because you've got to aim yourself at the weakest link of this team. And if you want to sit back and play a 5-3-2, you're playing into the hands of what they're strong at. Now, interestingly, watching the game early doors, I was watching Ronaldo's movement. Ronaldo was hanging off. He wasn't getting inside the 18-yard box. He was hanging back. He was looking for that second ball, you know, like a rebound off the shot and pouncing on. He was staying away from Villa's back three, and he was almost trying to get into their minds that he wasn't a threat. And he was coming in from very deep. And I was thinking, this is a bit ominous. He's going to pop up in space because Villa's back three would have switched off. But he almost became inconsequential to the game. And the main reason why United failed to put us to the sword was Greenwood just seemed to refuse to pass. He was in situations where he was just tunnel vision. When he could have laid it once, he could have laid it back to Fernandez. There was another time he could have passed to Ronaldo, who were in better positions. And it was almost naivety in his game that played into our hands.
Could be that the United forwards, that mean the sheer presence of Ronaldo there, they're all under pressure to like justify their place in the team, to be able to play alongside him. It's like he wants to be, you know, putting numbers up, like we used to say that, no, I deserve to play with Ronaldo, because Ronaldo's not getting dropped no matter what anybody says.
Yeah, no, totally. I think that's a very valid point, actually. He feels like he has to earn his keep to stay in there, and ultimately that's to the detriment of the team.
Possibly. I actually like Greenwood as a player. I think he's a cracking player, but I just think it's those two lads in the middle of the park. For them, McTominay and Fred, for where Man U want to be, they need... You've got to upgrade there.
Speaking of upgrades of midfield, which is something that a certain section of Villa fans have been crying out for, pinpointing like the likes of Douglas Luiz and even McGinn, and you know, we've put question marks on McGinn. The fun thing here is it's almost like Smith has heard this and he's thought, well, I'll just play Ramsey just to wind them up even more, because because they'll think they'll, you know, we must upgrade on Ramsey. And that was the big debate in the summer transfer window, was we need to upgrade this midfield. But that midfield, I thought, has been bang on. I thought Luiz was...
so balanced.
Luiz was fantastic against United. His delivery was fantastic. The through ball to Watkins after that little flick from Ings. Watkins, I think, was missing a bit of snap and confidence in his finishing, because, you know, that's one he could have put in on another day. And then, obviously, Luiz delivered the set piece, the corner that Hawes scored from. And he's got that, I mean, that right foot whipped in ball is in those early days when he scored against Bournemouth, he scored his other long range. It's almost the same motion. That corner was, you know, the way he shoots.
Yes, and he looks to be on free kick duty now as well.
And it's good quality. I mean, I've always really liked Luiz. We've always just said you just need to get the best out of him, and he's a cracking player. And I think since he's come back from the Olympics, I think obviously, you know, he's come back a winner. You know, he's obviously got the medal around his neck, and I think he's got that little bit of swagger in his play. And I think we've probably found a system that allows him, McGinn, and the fact that they've got Ramsey in there, who gives them both a little bit of extra energy.
Yeah,
probably helps them both. They just seem to complement each other quite well. And to be honest, you're looking on the bench at Buendia thinking, you know, we've spent a lot of money on him, but at the moment you're probably going to play Ramsey over him. What a problem to have.
And, you know, if Bailey was fit, he would have, pretty much think he would have started on the bench.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, tactically, yeah. I mean, it was a brave move, wasn't it? You know, sort of 5 minutes to go when you're bringing off Ramsey and you're going with Archer. I mean, that is a positive move. That's brave to bring, you know, one academy player off for an even, you know, a younger one. You know, big step up. It showed that Smith still thought with 5 minutes to go, do you know what, we can go and win this. And I think if Bailey had been on the bench, I think you'd have found Bailey on the pitch.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It was a good move. I mean, an illogical move, as we said in Match Club, when Buendia came on for Ings. I mean, Ings was almost... I think Ings had like 14 touches against Chelsea. He was anonymous. But in this game, he had a lot of the ball. But unfortunately, he hasn't been in a position where he's had chances on goal. He's been pressing. He's been getting stuck in. He's been holding up. He's doing everything apart from having chances. And that's not his fault. It just hasn't dropped him. It's turned to Watkins. And I think in the last couple of games, chances that Watkins has had, Ings would have probably put away.
Yeah, certainly the couple at Old Trafford. And there was the big one at Chelsea. I think Ings, you'd fancy to put it away. But do you know what? as long as they're still, you know, inputting the game, you know, inputting to the game and contributing to the team, then you don't mind too much. It's when you have, you know, strikers who are maybe not getting in the goals, but they're having a bit of a strop. I'll refer back to someone like a Codger.
Yeah.
Where he didn't give you anything outside the penalty.
I forgot about him.
Yeah. But players like that.
But yeah, just to give you some stats, Ings had 43 touches compared to, I think it was 14 against Chelsea, which is more than McGinn. He had 40, Ramsey had 35. So you're talking about somebody who is he's very much in the all-round play. I mean, Watkins only had 25 for all-in. So a good team effort from Ings. And this is something, you know, we bought Ings to score goals. But in this case, he was actually, he was running around like a blue-ass fly in terms of pressing. But when Buendia came on, I thought that was a sensible choice. But it also it did actually set up the Archer substitution in many respects. It gave him, you know, gave Smith that license.
No, you just think that formation again, it makes Villa's press a lot more even. I mean, in season last season especially, the press was, well, it was Watkins. That was the only press. He was carrying that cross all season. Yeah. Now you see it's like Ings on one side, Watkins on the other. Watkins is only doing half the work of the press, or maybe two of them at once. So it's a lot more effective.
And one from midfield can join in then. They don't all have to go as one, or you're not so conscious of, you either have to have Luiz or Nakamba sitting very deep. It just means you can actually be more solid and flat across the middle of the park.
Yeah.
As opposed to when, you know, one goes and teams can play through your lines quite easily. You know, Ramsey, especially if Ramsey joins in with the press, you've actually got, you know, Ramsey, Watkins, Ings, who will all get in and amongst a team's backline. And that's kind of where one of the big Watkins chances came from, by Villa pressing, put United under pressure, and obviously De Gea and their backline fucked up. And frankly, you know, Watkins probably should have scored.
Yeah, I think if Watkins goes on a little run, if he starts scoring, I mean, it's going to boost his confidence, and then we go on to another level, I think.
If you can get them both firing,
we get scary then, I think.
Yeah, that's when we get in a nosebleed.
I mean, that's the interesting thing is, like, you know, you look at the Chelsea performance, and after that Chelsea performance, you know, the outsider will see 3-0 and, you know, business as usual, Villa, you know, whatever. But, you know, we know that game could have been so much different. Cut out the mistakes, take your chances. We win that game. The swing is not that big. And here we saw people are saying, oh, Ollie's under pressure. I'm sorry, but last week they were talking about United as potential title contenders. And we dealt with them reasonably comfortably, I thought.
I mean, Martinez had probably two saves that he had to make, but they were relatively routine. They were ones, when you see the replays, you'd expect him to make them. I think if he doesn't, you'd be very disappointed. I thought he marshalled the back. I thought the back line dealt with everything that Man U threw at them really well.
Yeah.
I thought Hawes came in. I thought he played really well in the midweek game against Chelsea in the Cup. Played really well in the league game. I think he got man of the match, didn't he? And obviously, you know, he gets the winner with a brilliant header, which we'll come on to in a minute. But I thought the back line were really, really solid, and they marshalled them well. I mean, the fact that, geez, you know, in all our years of watching Villa against Man U, when Ronaldo's been on the pitch, he's been the dominant force and normally the difference maker. He barely had a kick.
Yeah, I mean, he was trying his drifting in from deep tactic, but United really didn't have that much of sustained pressure, or didn't really hit us with any real counterattacks with menace. And, you know, that's what kind of disabled him. Before we get to the goal, one moment which we were kind of laughing at the time was Ramsey, when suddenly he found himself clean open with time in the penalty box. And I think he shat himself. That was my diagnosis.
And then rolled over in a heap.
And he could have got up. He still had time to get up and do something with the ball. I think he went for saving face on social media and whatever before affecting the actual game, because he was feigning injury. And he wasn't injured, was he?
I mean, you wonder with things like that if he's maybe kicked the turf and has a little bit of a strain or something. But
he still had time to get up and do something. And that was that was the frustrating thing there.
Yeah. He's done it a couple of times, hasn't he, as well?
Yeah, he's
against Chelsea as well.
Fluffed his lines.
Yeah, but I thought he had a really good game, and
but that's it. He just needs that defining moment that almost triggers confidence in himself and the fans, and away he goes.
Yeah, I think a little bit like, I remember when Lee Hendry started getting goals, and then he really pushed on. Yeah, then he started to get that little arrogant streak and thought, yeah, do you know what? I'm the man here.
Yeah.
And to be honest, it actually reminds me a little bit of Lee Hendry in the way he plays, because he's always busy and he always wants to be involved. As you said, you're just waiting for that little bit of end product from him, and
you just need to flick the switch, and then you can officially write him down on the list as like a bonus player.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, most fans are thinking you need to sign this, sign that, and they forget about the players that come through.
Yep.
And, you know, they need a year of doing something before they actually consider them as the finished article. But yeah, he's just a goal or two away from actually being considered. Actually, he's one of our players and, you know, he's just saved us shitloads of money.
I mean, you were longing for him to bury the one against Everton, weren't you, the week before?
He nicked off
the defender and tried to whip it in the top corner. I think if that goes in, you're thinking, right, he's up and running now.
Yeah, and it'll do him a world of good. And, you know, we said this about Keenan Davis, but this is kind of a different thing because... We're not saying he needs to score all the time. He just needs that defining moment just to give him that. It's almost like a jolt of confidence that he is the real deal. So, you know, imposter syndrome is out the window.
Yeah, a little bit like, you know, some of those new guys who've come in. They've all actually hit the ground running pretty quickly. You know, Bailey's come straight in and had an impact. Ings has had an impact straight away. Buendia's got a goal already and had an impact. It's that little those little moments that just make you feel like, yeah, I belong. Because, you know, Ramsey will still be looking over his shoulder at Buendia going, I'm probably behind him in the pecking order, really.
Yeah. Oh, shit. When that Morgan Sanson gets fit, finally.
Well, competition, David.
Yeah.
We haven't mentioned the goal yet.
Very un-Villa at Old Trafford-like, wasn't it? 2 minutes to go.
According to Hawes, that was in the Vikings set-piece playbook.
Nanny McPhee,
yeah. Hawes took over... near post, and he said as soon as it left his head, he knew it was going in. Match of the day, decided it's offside. Alan Shearer said it shouldn't be, though. Was it offside?
Well, I think Watkins, he drifts into an offside position, but in theory, at the point it goes in, actually, he's not interfering with play.
Yeah.
If the Leicester one hadn't happened the week before, I don't think it would even have been mentioned, because it's a bit like the one McGinn had ruled out against Arsenal. The keeper wasn't getting near it. I mean, it doesn't matter where the player was.
Yeah, good point. But that moment, that wasn't the defining moment of the game, was it? That wasn't...
No. Somehow.
Wasn't even the most fun moment of the game. Because
Hawes nearly went from hero to zero, didn't he?
Because that came 3 minutes later when handball from Hawes, and I don't have any problems with that being a penalty, actually.
Nah, that's a penalty all day.
Of all the Manchester United penalties in the last four games, including this one, that was probably the most legit of all of them.
I got Mike Dean out of jail.
Smith says it's harsh, but that ball's going through to Pogba if it doesn't hit his hand. So I don't have any problems with that.
If that doesn't get given for you, you're raging.
At the same time, though, you think, what kind of fucking world is this?
Yeah.
What is this world that I live in?
At this point, I'm typing a tweet about my sheer hatred for Man United.
Is there no justice in this world?
Got scrubbed very quickly.
Yeah. The sound of bookmakers all over the country having to pay out when people backed United to get a penalty.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It was so inevitable. You know, even when Villa looked like they've nicked a win, which frankly, I said earlier, they should have been home and dry well before they even scored Villa, to be frank. But at that point, when you get the goal, you think, surely this is our day now.
But they always say reality is stranger than fiction. And United getting a penalty for the fourth consecutive game and Fernandez taking the fourth consecutive penalty. But this time...
He wasn't banking on Emmy.
There was the galvanising of South American shithousery forces and Douglas Luiz. And the interesting thing is here, you have two winners, an Olympic champion, Copa America champion, no other Villa player within that penalty box. Those two players who are now used to winning silverware.
They expect to.
Douglas Luiz's circumstance, it's goldware, never mind silverware. And so they were doing everything they possibly could to get into the minds. And, you know, I think Luiz was concentrating more on Mike Dean and other United players, while Martinez was going beyond the call of duty. He was shit-housing Ronaldo like I've never seen.
Like Ronaldo was never seen either.
You can't quite believe it. It was poetry in motion. That was like one of the greatest moments of being a Villa fan for a very, very long time, because we've long remonstrated on this podcast, especially Mr. Budd, how this team is potentially too much in the image of its manager, like too nice. And here we are, the opposite end of the spectrum, something that the average English football fan has hated, how these horrible foreign teams use all this unsportsmanlike conduct.
Gamesmanship.
Gamesmanship. And we lose to it in many international tournaments. But here we are. We are harnessing the power, full power, which we need.
Of the Emmy hip thrust.
We need something like this to conquer United. We need to use all the dark arts. And I mean, it was beautiful seeing what we'd seen in pre-season with Emmy, with Argentina. What he did against Colombia was of another level.
Oh, to have a microphone near him when he was doing this, by the way.
And this was, you're talking about two of our nemesis, Fernandez and Ronaldo, and he's doing them both at the same time. And he gets
Old Trafford.
At Old Trafford. And he gets the better
in the last minute. It's like Roy the Rover stuff. If Roy the Rovers was a shithouse, it's just perfect.
And that little shimmy at the end, which I think Mikhail Richards was saying, look at him, he's excited. He's not excited. He's reveling in his time.
He's thinking exactly what you tweeted at that point.
Yeah, take your token penalty and fuck off.
Fuck off. Stick that up the Stretford end, which yeah. I don't know if the ball's been returned yet, has it? It went so far into the upper, it went in the upper tier, didn't it?
In terms of what we've witnessed as Villa fans, let's say the last, I don't know, two decades, late United equalisers and winners are par de course.
It's in our DNA.
So to get a late winner against them is like, oh, that's a bit of payback. But then you've got another level of the last three games, they've had a fucking penalty. Fernandez has scored. So that was like a massive cherry on the top to take the lead. And then in injury time, which, you know, we know now against United as Fergie time, for them to get a penalty and then for them to miss it, just you couldn't have dressed it up, wrapped it up any better.
It's just perfect. It's perfect.
So yeah. Surely we're title contenders now.
Gotta be.
When we've broken Bruno Fernandes forever, haven't to
I don't
take
think
the
he'll
social
be on penalties will he next time?
No, haven't. I mean, making a penalty taker that's only missed one and like 23 penalties, or something like that, having to take the social media to do a 5-paragraph apology to Man United fans, his head's gone. He's broken forever.
He's just trying to justify himself to take the next penalty and not Ronaldo stamp all over his grave.
He may not even get in the pitch.
Post-match, I think Solskjaer was kind of a bit desperado, preaching all the kind of things that United have been doing to teams for a very,
how
very
dare
long
they
time.
Speak to the referee? Fuck off.
Yeah.
Like, you haven't done that on a weekly basis.
But the main thing was that Villa are doing it now and they're not playing. It's any means necessary. It's something I've always maintained should be in the DNA of Villa, because we're in a world where there's Chelsea, Manchester City, Manchester United, Liverpool, you know, the decks are stacked. We're not on a level playing field, so we've got to pull some tricks. We've got to do the dark arts and any means necessary to get where we want to be, and that's to be victorious in terms of silverware and establishing ourselves.
Yep.
Why just turn up and finish mid-table every season?
It's what we've said, isn't it? It's what we've said the last few years. You know, some years, you know, you want to be in the mix. That's the main thing for your football club. If your team can be in the mix and you can be competitive against these sort of sides, that's kind of all you ask. And Smith believes it clearly. I saw Courtney Hawes had said it after the game. He said, "No, we're Aston Villa. We expect this. We know we've got good players as well as these. You know, we think we can go toe to toe with anyone in this league." And that's the sort of thing you want your players coming out and saying after the game. Because I think the fans are starting to believe it as well now, that they go, actually, do you know what? When teams come to Villa Park, we expect us to get on the front foot. And when we go to Chelsea, we'll give it a go. Now, we don't expect to win every time, but we expect our team to be competitive and to sort of, you know, to throw some punches. We're not just going to cower in the corner like we've done in previous years.
To boil it down into really simplistic Twitter terms, it's getting rid of that mentality that provokes the I'll take a draw in this, you know, the tweet that goes out that says, I'll take a draw in this game.
It can go in the same family as, like, would you rather win a trophy or stay up? Sky's the limit.
We're going to Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. We're going to the Emirates. We're going to Anfield. We're going to try to win this game. And that's the bottom line. Simple as that.
Yeah.
And that's where Villa should be. And hopefully fans will start to buy into that. And, you know, it's not arrogance. And you know, there's always a, you know, tradition is a Brummy thing that we don't like to make a fuss and
yeah, it's a self-deprecating thing, but
self-deprecating thing, and we don't like to see cocky Cockney bastards or Manx and, you know, loud Manx. But, you know, it's a mentality thing. It does help your mentality if you have it. It's all about confidence and
belief,
and if that comes off across as arrogance, then so be it. But it is belief and confidence. And I think Villa now, and you know, this is through the manager. This is, you know, this is the manager that was getting this bullshit that, you know, certain outlets, and we mention them on Media Muppets now weekly, have noticed that, Villa have got to play unbeaten Everton. They've got to play Chelsea. They've got to play Manchester United. Then they're away to Spurs, and then they've got Manchester City pretty soon as well. It doesn't look like they're going to win many games here. And you know, so we're going to write the Smith under pressure article. It's like, fuck that. We've looked at, you know, we're not looking at the fucking fixture list. We're just taking a game at the time and beating whatever's in front of us. And we dispatched Everton, their only loss this season, 3-0, beating Manchester United.
Very deservingly.
Chelsea, on another day, we might have got something from that.
And we're very unlucky to get knocked out of the cup as well, lest we forget.
But the bottom line is, within the last year, we have beaten every one of the Sky Six, and the Sky Six is Arsenal, Spurs, Liverpool, Chelsea, Manchester United, Manchester City. Every one of them, apart from Manchester City, they're coming up soon. But within the last year, we've beaten them all, and we've beaten Arsenal twice. And that this is something that hasn't happened for a long time. So this affects the mentality of the team, the belief of the team, and it also showcases the potential of where this can go. Now, the only thing is we've got to take care of business at the other end of the table.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got to start dispatching the teams that you should be now.
But if you can beat your Uniteds, if you can beat your Liverpools, if you can beat your Chelseas, you should be beating Watford. I mean, unfortunately, against Watford and Brentford, we had compromises in terms of our first team, but we're not making any judgments on the start of this season. But going forwards, you know what you should be doing. And, you know, that's another mindset, isn't it? It's all right having that mindset where you just really go for it against the top teams, but it's that you've got to overcome the complacency and that belief that, oh, we should beat these. You know, when you play a lower team, it's all right thinking that you should beat them, but you've got to go out and do it.
And having the quality and the patience to be able to break down a team that maybe doesn't want to throw the kitchen sink at you.
And I think we do have that with some of the purchases we've bought. We've, you know, the Ings,
Bailey, Buendia, etc. I think,
yeah, Ings, Buendia, Bailey give you that potential now, so it'll be interesting to see how this pans out. I think that's all we've got to say about the United game, really.
I think so, just see it for it.
But the bottom line is, it's not so much about the game, it's an indication of where we can go and what could happen. And that was the most exciting thing for me.
Yeah,
as you know, as well as beating the Manx,
it's great to put a marker down early-ish in the season and go, okay, this is where we can be.
Right, give me a key stat, the stat of the game. Phil Shaw,
where do you start? Ronaldo had never been in the losing side in 12 league games against Villa, so this was unlucky 13 for him. Only had one win in the previous 45 games. That was
shocking. That
was Gavi's one. And Chris, you found out from Villa, the first team to keep a clean sheet against a Man United side, including Ronaldo, since Barcelona won the Champions League final in 2009. Now, he left after that, but still, it's a cracking stat.
When did he leave? He left after that Champions League final,
yeah,
didn't he?
Yeah, he fucked off.
Yeah, so it's one of those stats that they pull out and you realise actually for 10 years he didn't play, more than 10 years, 12 years. But yeah, no, it's all good. Right, before we head off, let's have a burning question. I think this is kind of a simple one, really. It's really just a selection problem. Would you drop Courtney Hawes for the trip to Spurs? Because obviously before this game, we'd been playing Axel Tuanzebe in a formation that I would expect them to play against Spurs, to be honest.
Yeah, I wouldn't, no.
No, neither would I.
Because I think, what more has he got to do to stay in the team? You can't argue with going to Old Trafford. Well, you can't argue. He went away and dealt with Lukaku really well, if you remember, in the cup game.
Yeah.
And played well in that match as well. He's gone to Old Trafford and been part of a back line that's kept a clean sheet against a, let's be frank, a pretty world-class attacking lineup. Yeah. Clearly, they were misfiring on the day, but whatever. And he scored the win. He's thinking, if I can't keep my place in the team after this, do I even have a future here? So you probably you have to keep him in the team.
Phil, would you start him against Spurs?
Yeah, no question of it. I mean, at the end of the day, he belongs to us. He's our player, so there's that element as well. Tuanzebe could end up with us. You know, he's been on the loan with us so many times, maybe we'll get to keep him soon. But at the minute, the Hawes is our player, so, you know, that has to count for something, especially when he's playing so well.
And you just have to say that Tuanzebe, that, you know, if Hawes comes in and he takes his opportunity, that's just unlucky on Tuanzebe. Tuanzebe's done nothing wrong. I've been really impressed with him since he's come into the side. I thought he was really good against in the Everton game.
Yeah.
And I thought he played well against Chelsea in the Cup. But he couldn't play against Manu. And for whatever reason, Hawes has come in. He's taken his chance. You have to hold your hands up and go, okay, he's got the shirt for now.
I have seen other supporters saying exactly what Phil's just said there, that if he's your player, then that's where, who you should be investing in. And, you know, he should start for that reason.
It's a fair argument.
Yeah. Right. Before we leave you, I just want to give a massive shout out to the My Old Man Said patrons. Thank you very much for supporting the show. And special thanks for the new members of our mom squad. Thanks to Jake Ajala, Nick Price Thompson. Oh, it's good to get some hyphenated names in there. We'll be like the Villa under 23s before you know it. Who's good at pronouncing Swedish and Norwegian names?
Asgeir Jetteland.
Yep, I think that passes. And Anders Brelind. Thank you very much for signing up. Oh, and also thank you very much to Dan Clinton, who has signed up from a monthly to an annual subscription. So thanks to Dan for that. If you sign up as an annual member, you save 2 months, which is 15% off. So please do go to myomansaid.com and click on the Patreon link there and find out more details about Match Club and the extra...
Which was great this weekend, I might add.
Oh, for United, yeah, it was very good. Mm-hmm. So, and as well as Match Club, there is also a My Old Man Said Extra podcast channel where you will get exclusive extra podcasts dropping as well, with more to come this week. Please do go to myomansaid.com and click on the Patreon link. And also, don't forget to follow the podcast on whatever podcast app you follow this on. And follow us on Twitter as well, on @myoldmansaid.com. Right, can we do a double back-to-back away wins against Spurs, United and Spurs?
That would be a big...
I think it's on.
A big statement, wouldn't it?
It's on like Donkey Kong. I think as soon as I put out that tweet about who's more likely to win, Usyk and or Villa, and they both won. Usyk won at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. If he can do it, I think we can do it as well. So until then, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.